Nutrient management is always top of mind for producers, but nitrogen fertilizer management has been receiving considerably more attention due to fluctuating prices of inputs, more products hitting the market, and efforts to reduce emissions, nutrient leaching, and runoff. As producers finalize their crop plan for the year, many producers might be wondering if an enhanced efficiency fertilizer product is a fit for their farm. Enhanced efficiency fertilizers include a range of products that optimize nutrient uptake and prevent nutrient loss of volatilization, denitrification, or leaching by controlling the speed of release or altering soil fertilizer reactions. Join us as we talk about what the benefits of these products are and the best management practices for applying them. Welcome to the Wheat Profit Podcast. I am Carmen Prang, Agronomy Extension Specialist with Sask Wheat, and today I'm excited to be joined by Associate Professor from the University of Saskatchewan and Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture Research Chair, Richard Farrell. Welcome, Richard, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for asking me. Pleasure to be here.
So to kick things off, Richard, can you tell us about your experience with working with enhanced efficiency fertilizers? You know, what are the main projects you're working on, and what are you hoping to achieve with your work?
Sure. We've been working with the enhanced efficiency products for probably 6 or 7 years now. It started out, most of my research is in an area that we would refer to as sort of environmental agronomy. So how agronomic systems interact with the environment. And so, you know, some of the early work was on just looking at how these products affect nitrous oxide emissions, but also how that interacts with the agronomy of the system. So like maintaining yields while reducing emissions. So, and that's what these products are supposed to do, is that they, just by the name, it's an enhanced efficiency product. So what we're trying to do is get optimized nitrogen use efficiency by the crop. So for example, from an environmental perspective, nitrogen that's in the ground that the crop isn't using is just susceptible to loss. So it could be through nitrate leaching, it could be ammonia volatilization, it could be the production of nitrous oxide. And doesn't matter how it's lost, if you lose it, you've paid for it, but you're not getting any benefit from it. So the whole idea with these products is to sort of synchronize when the nitrogen is available to when the crop can use it. So, you know, there's different groupings of products. So there's slow release products polymer coated or sulfur coated products that let the, so there'll be a urea granule and it'll be, say, coated in a polymer coating that's designed to release the urea at a known rate, at a slow rate. And so basically what happens is the urea particle is there, water penetrates through, dissolves the urea, and then that urea solution dissolves back through the coating into the soil at a controlled rate. And it's there so that the plant can use it. So there's plants and there's microorganisms using the nitrogen. And if there's no plant roots out there and plants not using it, then the microorganisms will use it. And that's where you sort of run into some of these losses. And so the idea here is to just sort of control that release rate so that as the plant roots grow, the nitrogen is slowly being released and the plant gets to take it up. And then the other products are sort of products that involve what are called stabilized products. So they'll have a urease inhibitor or a nitrification inhibitor. And the urease inhibitor sort of blocks the step where the urea it undergoes hydrolysis to form ammonia, and the nitrification inhibitor blocks the step where that ammonium is reduced to nitrate. And so they sort of function at different places and they have different roles. So the urease inhibitors are really there designed to sort of reduce ammonia volatilization losses. So they just don't, if it's not out as ammonia, then it won't volatilize under the right conditions. And so that's what its primary goal is, to do that. And the nitrification inhibitors are really there to block that step of where it goes to nitrate. And where it goes to nitrate is where you can have nitrous oxide being formed. So nitrate is the source material for the nitrous oxide. So they have different purposes and different effects on the soil. But all of them are designed to sort of slow that release of nitrogen into the soil so that it's the plant that gets to use it, not the microorganisms.
Perfect. And so in your work, have you worked with all of these different kinds of products, or is there one that you've been mainly focusing on?
We've worked with all of them. We've worked with the polymer coated materials. We've worked with products that have dual inhibitors, so have a urease inhibitor and a nitrification inhibitor combined, or just a nitrification inhibitor alone, or the urease inhibitor alone. And so, you know, we have a little bit of experience with all of them. Mostly, we try and use a lot of what we've been doing lately is more with the nitrification inhibitors and the dual inhibitors. Just because we have specific research goals in mind. And so that's what they're there for.
Perfect. So you are looking at the environmental side of these products, but you've also looked at the agronomic benefit, which I want to touch on a little bit more today. So from your perspective, why are farmers looking to include products like these into their nutrient management plans? And what would be some of the potential benefits to farmers for using these products?
Well, the whole thing is everything is about efficiency. What's the most efficient system? And so in an area like Saskatchewan, you know, nitrogen use efficiency is somewhere around, you know, 60% or so, which basically means that 40% of the nitrogen you're putting on is in the system that the plant's not using. And so the idea is to try and boost that, to make them more efficient. And one of the ways is, you know, when you put fertilizer on in the spring with the seed, for those first couple of weeks, there's, you know, initially as the plant grows, it basically lives off the nitrogen in the seed. So the larger the seed, the longer they can sort of live off that nitrogen and everything. And then as they put out roots, then they start taking up the nitrate. But in the meantime, microorganisms are there. And if, depending on the conditions, the weather conditions and everything, you can lose nitrogen as ammonia volatilized. You can lose it through nitrate leaching or just through the denitrification process. So really what we're trying to do is improve that synchronization so that you're getting more bang for your buck, basically. The idea is, I think most manufacturers would recommend that you go in at a lower rate. So if your fertilizer test comes back and says 100 kilograms and is needed with an enhanced efficiency product, you might be looking at going in at 20% lower or maybe even as high as 30% lower than what the test recommends. So you might go with 80 kilograms or 70 kilograms. So there you should, there's a savings, there's a cost savings because you don't have to pay for as much now. And I realize there's a premium on the cost of the enhanced efficiency products. And so that has to be taken into account. But the idea is basically that you don't need as much to get that efficiency. So you're losing less nitrogen. So you're getting more of what you paid for, basically, is the idea. And so from the agronomic standpoint, it's basically increasing nitrogen use efficiency to maintain the yield you've got or possibly enhance. Now, we've done work where we've gone in with enhanced efficiency products at the soil test recommendation, so at a higher rate than you would normally do. And we, in the test that we did, we didn't see yield enhancements with it. We saw increased nitrogen use efficiency, so they had higher nitrogen uptake, but it didn't result in a yield increase or not in anything that would be statistically significant. So there'd be maybe a small increase, but that was about it. But at the same time, we've done work where we've dropped the rates by 20 or 30%, and we've seen no decrease in yields either. So going in with a lower amount just means you're getting the same nitrogen use efficiency, but with less product. So you're losing less to the environment. And that means that you're getting more of what you paid for. So I think that's the idea. And now, you know, now with the new federal government sort of target of reducing nitrous oxide emissions by 30% over the next, 7 or 8 years, there's another opportunity here to use these products to reduce those emissions. And it's the same thing. We've seen large emissions reductions with these products when they're applied properly. We've seen emissions reductions of greater than 50%, you know, and as low as, say, 15%. So just depending upon what the conditions are, you can see these things. So there's sort of an agronomic side to this and an environmental side to it. And, the research is really, or our research is aimed at sort of to optimize those two things, that you want to be able to sort of maintain yields as high as you can with minimizing the losses that you get and reducing the greenhouse gas emissions part of everything. So I think that's the purpose of the research and everything. And there's still work to be done, but we're sort of closing in. We've seen some of these things and we have ideas of where they're going to be effective.
So are there any downsides that you have seen to using these products? So you mentioned the cost as one of them, but any other effects?
We haven't seen like a negative effect on yields or protein levels or anything like that. The big thing on all of this is cost, is how you go about using them. And so, recently over the last year and a half or so, we've had more questions about blending these materials with conventional urea. So, a lot of the work with that is with the polymer coated product. So ESN is the product that most people are using here, and you're trying to blend that. And so whether it's a 20, 80 years, 30, 70 blend or a 50, 50 blend, people are starting to ask questions about the effectiveness of this. And, I've done a little looking around and everything, and it's just hard to find any research that sort of can say that yes, this is a really good idea, or no, it's not a good idea. And so I think people are looking for solutions to this to address the cost issue. And a lot of people are concerned, they get a soil test recommendation and, you've got a fertilizer manufacturer saying, here, if you use this enhanced product, you can put on 20% less than you would your soil test recommendation says. And a lot of people are just hesitant to do that because in their mind, they're thinking, well, if I go 20% less and we get a nice, we get good spring rains and everything's looking good, maybe I'll get a higher yield in me. So maybe I go in a little bit higher rate and everything. And so, but then there's the cost effect of that. And so people are looking for ways to sort of reduce those costs, and blending them seems like a possible solution to that. But there just isn't a lot of research. Like I was looking, I've talked to a few people who were blending ESN with things, but not nitrification inhibitors or urease inhibitors. And I did some research over the last couple of days here and just can't find any research that deals with that. And I've talked to a few other people and they can't find any research that talks about that either. So I think it's something that people want to do, and there may be some benefits to it, because all of a sudden, if you're doing that, now you've got an available source of nitrogen urea that's there. And so if you get some early season rains and everything's looking good, they've got this nice available nitrogen that there, you might get a boost, get really good germination and early plant growth. And then the enhanced efficiency fertilizer will sort of fill in down the road a little bit. And so there could be some benefits to it. But I just think there's not enough information there to say one way or the other as to whether this is a good idea or not.
Perfect. So let's go into the 4 R's of enhanced efficiency fertilizers a little bit. So how can farmers best use these products to get the most bang for their buck? Nitrogen can be one of the most costly inputs, so you want to do everything you can to avoid losses. So in terms of timing, in a normal year under ideal conditions, in the spring, how long will these products last once you apply for them to be able to provide nutrition to the plant?
We've seen them being releasing for anywhere from, say, 3 weeks to 8 weeks out into the season. And it really depends on the conditions. What's the moisture condition of the soil? How warm is it? Everything else. It really sort of depends on it. Because with a lot of the products, like with, say, the polymer coated products, the release is sort of controlled by temperature. So, if your high temperatures and moisture is there, then it might release faster. And so the window is a little bit shorter. If it's drier and cooler, it might last longer and go out. So it really varies with the product and with the weather, and it's the key with everything that has to do with agriculture is weather is the most important thing that sort of controls everything that happens here. So basically you're just trying to time that thing to when there's going to be roots there to use that nitrogen. And so that depends on moisture and temperature, and it's the same thing for the fertilizers. But we have seen results that go out for several weeks. where the release is. And I know there's literature values that say that for some of the products, they can last anywhere from, you know, a month to a month and a half to 2 months of a slow release over time release. So it just really sort of depends on the way. There's no set answer for that. The ideal one is that you're trying to do it for at least, say, 3 to 4 weeks is everything. And I think that's what most of the products are sort of being able to say, that they are have those slow release and enhanced efficiency products for 3 to 4 weeks or more. So
perfect. So in terms of timing as well, can you touch a little bit more about doing a split application? So going into the season, it's dry in the spring and you go in with your urea at seeding and then you want to top up later. So what have you seen with this approach?
We have done some work with split applications. We did some work with split applications in irrigated canola, and those systems it worked really well. I mean, we got we saw no yield loss with the split application. We significantly reduced all of our N2O emissions because of the split application. It means there's less at the beginning of the season, and late in this, the second application late in the season is. By then, there's nice plants up. They've got plenty of roots down. You put the nitrogen down, and they outcompete the microorganisms, so that nitrogen just gets used up. So from an environmental perspective, you get way lower emissions, but it's also the plants can use it because they've already got existing root systems. Now, our system, because it was irrigated one, you know, we were able to sort of top dress and put it on, and then we irrigated right away, so we were able to wash it in. And so the problem with a top dress is, you know, it depends on what you're expecting. So like if you're going to do it because the forecast says you've got rain coming, and so you're going to do this with the idea that you'll wash everything into the soil so you cut down on ammonia volatilization. So, but the problem can be if you don't get as much rain as you expected to, then you might have just enough to sort of get everything wet and move it in just a little bit into the top of the soil. And then you do have ammonia volatilization and you can lose significant amounts of the nitrogen through volatilization. But if you get enough rain and wash it in, then it goes back to the plant roots are just sitting there waiting for it. And so it's a good thing for that. But our data, we weren't seeing yield enhancements, but we didn't see yield losses from doing it. So it worked out. It worked out well from that. It was, you know, agronomically and environmentally the way to go. So like, you know, say 2 years ago or 2021, with the drought being the way it was, the split application, you wouldn't have put anything on the second time. You would have saved money from just that. So, you know, there's advantages to that. But it goes back to there's the vagaries of weather. You just don't know what you're going to get, and you just have to be careful with it. Enhanced efficiency products, if you use an enhanced product later on as the top dress, then you can sort of, you know, if it's something with a urease inhibitor or even a polymer coated one that's slow released, you're less likely to run the risk of seeing that ammonia volatilization loss. So if you don't get as much rain, it's not going to be a problem if you've got a product with, say, a urease inhibitor in it that's basically there to target that ammonia losses. So, I mean, there could be a role. We didn't do that, but I know some people have done where they do sort of conventional urea early in the season and then an enhanced product as a later one. And so, or the vice versa and everything. So there's still questions to be answered on it, but we have seen split applications work very well. And it's just with that, you can take measurements on your crop and sort of gauge what the nitrogen need is going to be at that split with the second application. So there's opportunities to save money going down that way by being able to adjust what you're applying. Things are looking really good. You might be able to be going and put in a little more nitrogen than you would have to boost things, or it might be that it's drier and so you don't need as much nitrogen. And so I think there are opportunities there from both an agronomic and an environmental standpoint to sort of support that. Of course, a second application means you're driving across the field one more time. So there's fuel cost and other things that have to be accounted for. But it is an option that's there for everyone. So
Definitely. So let's switch to right now. So in terms of applying these products at the right rate, the first step would obviously be to soil test and determine your yield goal and look at nutrient removals and budgets, among other things. But how do producers go about determining blends of these products? So you touched on it a little bit earlier, but is there more research coming to figure out these blends?
I think so. With the people that I've been talking to, everybody's sort of getting questions about it now. So there's a lot of curiosity going on as to what would be a good blend and everything. So we've been talking with some people at Ag Canada about putting in a grant proposal to do some work on blending this year. And so I think there's work that needs to be done on it because we just don't know what would be a good blend. I think right now people are probably blending based solely on price. What's the economically favorable blend, and whether that's the most agronomic or environmentally optimum blend, we don't know. And so that's what needs to be done. Rates, I think, are, it is. Soil testing is a key to that, and looking at the nutrient uptake. And I know there's a project here that's led by Fran Wally in the Ag College here that looking at updating the nutrient removal guidelines for Western Canada. And so that work should be done in the next few months here. And so it'll come out time for next season, but that's coming out, and to look at those removal rates. But it's knowing what your crop needs. So what was taken up last year, you need to know what the history is, what was taken up last year, conditions. It's the same thing after 2021, there was a lot of residual nitrogen left in the field. And so, soil testing would come back and say, you don't need to add as much this year because you still have a lot sitting there. So I think those things are really important for it. And the question becomes, it's everything comes down to economics, is that how often should you do? I mean, ideally, in an ideal world, you'd go out and you'd soil test, every season. But, whether that's practical from an economic standpoint is not something that I could answer.
Perfect. So our next 4R is the right place. So a lot of the research tells us that the best place to put our fertilizer is down at seeding, following the seed safe rates and things like that. As we know, this isn't always possible for many different reasons. And this can also be costly if done on the entire field with an enhanced efficiency product. So what are your thoughts on applying these products to areas of the field like low spots or poorly drained areas that are prone to saturation during the growing season in a variable rate situation?
So I think that's where that's the direction that we're heading in. I think, we know for a fact that there are certain areas in the field that have higher emissions. So area low spots in fields, sort of in little catchment areas where water accumulates, and that there's also an accumulation of organic matter and nitrogen and other nutrients that sort of move into those areas. And then there are high areas in the field where everything sort of moves out of it, and they tend to be drier and a little bit less productive. And so enhanced efficiency products from an environmental standpoint tend to work best when the potential for loss is high. And those low areas tend to be the areas where the loss potential is high. So those would be areas that you would target with an enhanced efficiency product. And then you could use a conventional product in the upper slope positions and in areas that tend to be a little bit drier. The real question is, how do you define these different management zones so you know where to place what you need to place? And so there is research into that. I know a few projects that are ongoing now and a few projects that are being proposed to look at this, at different methods of sort of defining management zones and then applying the variable rate technology across that. So you're putting in different rates and different product in different places to optimize yield and to optimize nitrogen use efficiency. So in those upper spots, a conventional one, you're less likely to have some of the losses, and productivity might not be as high, and so you can probably go with a little bit lower rate there, or maybe you put in a little bit more and less in the lower spot where you tend to have higher loss potential. But I think this is the direction that we're moving in, is sort of tying for our not just rates, but placement, timing, everything with the landscape part to sort of integrate 4Rs and variable rate technology. And I think that's on the horizon here, that more people seem interested in doing it and trying it out. And so the real question is, we need some data that sort of backs it up and says, this is worth it. And I think, you know, one of the big changes in research that I've noticed over the last couple of decades is, you know, when we first started doing N2O measurements and everything, we sort of did environmental research. That was that we looked at strictly at the N losses. And then, you know, that evolved over to where nothing gets done. There's no N2O work or emissions loss work that gets done that doesn't have an agronomic component, because the two of them are so tightly linked that you have to do that. And then over the last few years, it's been moving more into the economic one of looking at what's the cost of all of this. And I think the message that we would like to have out is that, you know, by going into 4Rs or using best management practices, you're not asking people to do something extra for an environmental benefit. It's if you go in with 4Rs and with best management practices, you just get these emissions reductions automatically. And so it's not an extra burden. The burden is being able to show that you're getting these environmental benefits without sacrificing any agronomic output. And I think that's entirely possible. I think we can do that with the technology we've got. It's just sort of it's packaging things together. And, you know, I've had discussions with some friends lately about this, that, you know, from a research perspective, if you want to look at the effective rate, you control source placement and timing and you vary the rate. And then you might look at timing and you control, you know, source placement and rate, and you look at timing. But the thing is, what farmers are looking for is that package. What's the whole package? From a research perspective, it's always better to have one thing that you're looking at and control everything else. So now a lot of research is also looking at bundled practices. So if you put these things together, does one of them override everything else? So like if you use an enhanced efficiency product and you get a 20% reduction, 30% reduction in emissions, and then you put that in with, a deeper placement or the different timing and everything, do you get an added benefit, or does one of them control everything? And those are the things that we're trying to work on now is what's that bundle? Because nobody wants to, you know, you really want that package. You're not looking for one thing. You're not going to control everything else. You want what's best as an integrated package. And that's where research, I think, is moving now, is to sort of get those packages together for farmers to be able to look at it and say, not only will you get, you know, you'll get a good yield off of this, you'll get an environmental benefit, but there's also an economic benefit to this as well. And so I think those are all coming together. And in the last few years, I've noticed that there's more and more studies are also coming into that social aspect of how do you get the message, you know, what's the messaging? And I think one of the key things that's come out of the federal government's target of reducing emissions is the conversation that people are talking about this now. And by talking about it, you get a lot of different opinions and you get, you know, you get more conversations about what's going to work here. And I think that's just having those conversations is really a good thing. And I think we're seeing more of that. I mean, been probably asked to do more talks on this in the last 6 months than I was in the last 5 years. So I think having those conversations is good, and just getting the information out.
I would definitely agree with that. So to wrap up, I want to bring it back to your work that you are currently doing. So what have you seen in your results from your work so far? Are these products providing a benefit to the farmers in terms of yield or environmental? You kind of touched on both a little bit, but any exciting results coming from your work?
Yeah, we actually have a project now that's looking at one of the dual inhibitors with a urease and nitrification inhibitors in wheat and canola. We put everything in at the soil test recommendation and then 10, 20, and 30% lower than the soil test recommendation. And There's two sites. There's a site here in Saskatoon and one up in Milford. I'm running the one in Saskatoon, so that's the one that I have the data for and everything. And what we've seen with it is that with canola, we can get very good emissions reductions with a 30% reduction. So as you reduce the amount of the enhanced product that goes on, you see emissions reductions. We're also using a conventional urea that's also in at that 10, 20, 30%. And what we're seeing is that, you know, as you reduce the amount of the conventional urea, yields tend to drop off, and emissions drop, but not nearly as much. So like, an enhanced efficiency product at 100% of the soil test recommendation lowers the emissions to the same amount that a 30% reduction in urea did. And so a 30% reduction in the conventional, in the enhanced efficiency product, lowers the emissions even lower. So, and we saw with the enhanced efficiency product at the lower rates, we did not see a change in yield. We didn't see a yield impact. With the wheat, it was a little bit less. We saw the same trend was there, but not quite as large as we saw with the canola. And so, and this was just the first year. We've got one more year on that project, and we're just beginning to sort of take a look at some of the data from Milford. And it'll be really interesting because, you know, very different soils, and they had very different weather conditions than we did. They had a much later spring. They had a lot more soil moisture to begin with. So we'll be really interested to see what the differences are there. Here, things were dry at the beginning of the year. And so there'll be a nice contrast between the two of them to see what's going on. But it was really exciting, and it was really nice to be able to look at it and say, you know, yes, I mean, an enhanced efficiency product at the soil test recommendation still gives you a large emission reduction, and, you know, we didn't see a boost in the yields. So there would be the price thing effect there, but you could reduce it by 30%, get an even bigger emissions reduction, and have no impact on yield. So I think there's, you know, it's showing that there's a possibility of using these products at lower rates to get both an environment, to get the best agronomic outcome that you're going to get, and an environmental benefit as well. So I think you can meet the government's targets, maintain your yields by using these products. And hopefully, the data that I do recall was from, I think, 2021. And it was for a product that had nitrification inhibitor. I believe the premium on it was about 15%. So, you know, if you had a 15% reduction in what you applied, it would be the same cost as a conventional one. But if you had a 30% reduction, it would mean that you were actually paying 15% less to get the same yields for this. So I think there are opportunities there. But of course, you know, in the last year, prices have just sort of skyrocketed for everything. So exactly what that premium is now, I'm not sure. But I think the opportunity is there to have an environmental, agronomic, and economic benefit for farmers.
Perfect. And so what's next for you in your research coming up?
The next one for us really is to look at the combining 4R and variable rate technology. And what I really want to do is look at some of the blending of these products, because I think there is a cost benefit to that. And my guess is that there's also an environmental and an agronomic benefit to it, but exactly how those blends will work out, I'm not sure at this point. And so I think that's an area that I'd like to explore going forward with that. And we have, you know, we're just entering the next big phase of funding for agronomic research. And so there are a number of projects possibly out there that will look at combining 4R technology with a variety of different crops and everything to sort of target some of these things to improve our environmental and agronomic performance. So, but I think that the message that we really want is that it's really about nitrogen use efficiency. What we're all aiming for is to improve that nitrogen use efficiency, because, you know, if you're paying for 100 kilograms of nitrogen and your crop's only using 60 of it, you know, and maybe a little bit of it hangs over the next year. So maybe 70 or 75 you're going to get the use for. That's still 25 that you're paying for that you're not getting the use for. And so if we can increase that nitrogen use efficiency, if we can go from 60 to 70% even, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a big improvement and it would save a lot of money. So that's the goal here.
Well, I think that was a great point to end off at, that nitrogen use efficiency is the main goal overall. So thanks, Richard, for joining us today. As always, we encourage producers to do their own research on these products, check out some of Richard's and others' research on these products as well, and work with your agronomist to see if they are a fit for your farm business. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Wheat Profit Podcast. For more information on wheat agronomy, policy and advocacy, and wheat research, please visit our website at saskwheat.ca.